The NBA draft lottery is tomorrow, listeners, and the New York Knicks have a 14% chance of earning the number one pick in this year's NBA draft, and they will be represented by their number one pick, Patrick Ewing. Will he be that good luck charm that we all need as Knicks fans to net a Zion Williamson or Ja Morant? Fingers crossed. Please, NBA gods, answer our prayers. Let's get the damn show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. That erupt, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants are Jets, Yankees are Mets, Knicks are Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
Ayo, B! And please pardon my fresh as we bring you all new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, May 13th, 2019, and this show airs every Monday from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, TuneIn, Google Play, Pocket Cast, Satellite Radio. We're on various social media outlets, listeners, so please be sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss a damn thing. And me and the Mad Mike are also on social media, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram, Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter, L-L-O-Y-D. Be sure to hit that follow button. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and the Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@partmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. As always, listeners, another great show for you today. We're going to talk some NBA playoffs. We're going to talk the NBA draft lottery as the New York Knicks have a 14% chance to earn the number one pick. What happens if they get that number one pick? What happens if they get that number five pick? We're going to talk about that as well. We're going to talk about the LA Lakers' new coach as they hire Frank Vogel to replace Luke Walton as the next coach. How does that feel? How's LeBron James feel about that? We're going to talk about that as well. And is Cam Newton still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL? We're going to give our opinion on that also. So as always, listeners, just buckle up, sit back and relax, and start spreading the news. Hey, yo! Let's get it!
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
Lloyd, I'm on the road. I was getting some intel at Jets rookie orientation, not rookie minicamp, orientation, over the weekend, so.
Listen, first and foremost, Mad Mike, I want to wish everybody, out there, Happy Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. God bless, love, and blessings. I hope you had a wonderful day yesterday. But let's move on, and let's talk about some basketball, Mad Mike, as we all know that the lottery is tomorrow, okay? And on that day, which is Tuesday, May the 14th, our team, the New York Knicks, will place tied to top the 2019 draft lottery with the eye on the first pick. And they can have the highest selection in the draft, Matt Mike, since 1985, which was the first year of the lottery when Patrick Ewing became the pick and changed the franchise for the next 15 years, Matt Mike. Now, while that's the ideal scenario for the Knicks, they can be impacted by not just where else they fall in the lottery, which is what we don't want to happen, Matt Mike. But the teams that can jump them, they have the slimmest odds, 1% for Sacramento. Sacramento still has a 1% chance to get the number one pick. Now, it's a long shot, but they can get the number one pick. So if there is a chance that the Knicks wall away from the lottery, the worst position, and end up picking fifth, what happens to this organization, Matt Mike? Because that seems to be the history or the luck, not so much the history, but the luck of this franchise. We just have no luck at all, Mad Mike. And when that first pick was given to us, or, you know, when we got the lottery for the first pick of Patrick Ewing, a lot of people thought that that was fixed. Are people going to think that this draft is fixed if the Knicks end up with the number one pick? Look, we both say all the time that the NBA needs for the Knicks to be successful. They make money when the Knicks are relevant. And what other way to make the Knicks relevant is by them earning the number one. I'll be happy with number two, Mad Mike. But if the Knicks get one, they have no choice but to take Zion Williamson. No choice. And if they get that pick, that opens up other scenarios, which we'll talk about.
Dude, I'm be honest with you, and I'm going to knock on some wood, literally. I almost want it to be kind of like the New York Hockey Rangers getting number two, where, you know, in a way, you don't have to be right. If you get the number one pick, and hear me out here, hear me out. If you get the number one pick, you're under a lot of pressure to get it right. Right? Like you said it, I've heard others say it. Zion is not a finished product by any means. He might never be a finished product. It might take 3 or 4 years before he's a finished product. We've had the conversation here where Ben Simmons is in his third year, and he's nowhere close to a finished product. So I'm just saying, if you got the number two pick, the pressure's really off, because when you hear most people talk, this is a two-person draft, is it not? Zion Williams and Ja Morant, right? So if they get the number two pick, how can they go wrong? I'm going to get one of the two players. It's like hockey. Hockey is a two-player draft, and the Rangers have no pressure because they're just going to take whoever falls. Whichever one doesn't go first. The pressure's on the guy taking the first player. So I don't know. Obviously I want them to get the first pick because you want them to have their say. But at the same time, to me, I'm like, if they have their say, they're going to screw this up.
And I agree with you 10,000%. It's funny that you say that, Matt Mike, which is why I feel if they don't get one, they have the opportunity to screw up. So let's just say they pick two, Matt Mike, okay? And let's just say whoever picks one, I think the only team that may take Ja Morant at one is Phoenix. So let's say Phoenix is not that team to pick one. Let's just say it's, Chicago. I think Chicago finished with the third worst record, right? I mean, they were one of the teams that had, the top three worst records.
Yes.
In the
yes,
NBA.
Yes.
Chicago picks one and the Knicks pick two, right? And Chicago takes Zion Williamson. I can see, Mad Mike, the Knicks passing over Ja Morant, okay, because of this whole Kyrie Irving thing, and either taking Cam Reddish, who I'm hearing reports that they're in love with Cam Reddish, and that makes me nervous, or RJ Barrett and pass up on Ja Morant.
I'm going to tell you, I completely disagree with you. The biggest reason I disagree with you is two things. One, if they sign Kevin Durant in the offseason, and let's be clear, if they sign Kyrie, it's because they signed Kevin Durant. Kyrie is not coming here. He can barely handle the Boston media. He's not coming here by himself. There's no way it's possible, right? So if Kevin Durant signs here, Kevin Durant is a small forward, power forward. You just invested a top 10 pick last year on Kevin Knox, right? You have Mitchell Robinson. You still have the likes of Frank Ntilikina, who a lot of people think is going to end up playing small forward, a D3 guy, right, if he's still here. The Knicks have a lot of forwards. Most of their talent, if you think about it, most of their talent is in the front court. Their backcourt is still pretty weak through this entire transition. Yeah, outside of, I guess, Dennis Smith Jr., right? Who else do they have? So what I'm saying is if you're getting Kevin Durant, then I don't think Cam Reddish nor RJ Barrett is the guy, nor DeAndre Hunter, or whoever you want to name it. I think that this for them is going to be a guard draft, whether they get Kyrie or not. Now, the other reason is they can only sign Kyrie for 4 years. If you're one of those people that believe that Kyrie only has maybe 2 or 3 years left in those knees.
And he's injured all the time.
Correct. Then Ja Morant is the guy you want, right? You can always play Mitchell, KD, and Knox in the front court and you can always, yeah, you know what I mean?
I agree, Matt Mike, because that makes all the sense in the world, but we've been scorned by this organization making such terrible decisions. And that's the scenario
right,
that I'm throwing out. I'm not saying that that's what they should do. By no means. You take the best player, which we saw the Giants not do that. After Dave Gettleman said he was going to take the best player, he ended up not taking the best player available. All right? And we say this. I've been saying this for the last couple of weeks, that the Knicks and the Giants go hand in hand as far as making idiotic decisions. Now, Scott Perry has been doing the right thing. But for some reason, Mad Mike, you know, I just can't get out of my gut feeling that there's a possibility that he could turn around and do the wrong thing. We'd be sitting there scratching our heads like, what in the hell are you doing?
Okay. No, I'm telling you right now, I think it's a two-player. That's why they got to get in the top two. It's a two-player draft, and they know this, and you do it. Because not only that, Lloyd, if you sign, let's say Kyrie is healthy for all four seasons, right? Why do you have to keep him after the four seasons if you have, his 4 years will coincide with John Morant's 4-year rookie deal?
John Morant is that dude, man, Mike. He's that dude, straight up.
No, but what I'm saying is, but his 4-year contract will run in line with his rookie deal is going to run in line with Kyrie's max deal, 4 years. That's it. So when Kyrie's time is up, here, Ja, pay Ja. Here you go. Time to pay you. Thanks for the 4 years, Kyrie. Hopefully you brought us a championship. We're moving on.
Again.
At that same time, Kevin Durant will be 35 years old. It will be a sip. Listen, and I know what you're going to say, again, Mike, they don't make smart decisions, but what I'm trying to tell you is it would be a seamless transition from this max deal for these two players, and as they're ushered out, Ja can usher in the new regime, and they'll still have all that money, that $80 million, to then reinvest in the next crop of guys.
Hopefully, what you're saying makes all the sense in the world, and I agree with you 10 million percent. Let's just hope that the Knicks brass feels the same way, but here's the thing, Mad Mike, and this is the thing about Knicks fans, because not landing the draft lottery's first pick will probably disappoint some New York Knicks fans. And like we said, that's not the worst case scenario with the Knicks falling number two slot, because the Knicks fans' eyes, that means no Zion Williamson, and this class top star and a player that can redefine his franchise and provide excitement, unlike most who have worn the blue and orange since Patrick Ewing. You know, I was talking to a friend today, my good friend Troy, and Troy was like, Nick, Lloyd, when's the last player, or what's the last player that the Knicks had that was a game-changing player for this organization? And I thought, you know, that the Knicks drafted, he said, mind you, that the Knicks drafted, and I said, Patrick Ewing. And that was, what I just say, 1985?
You know, it's funny. Yeah, that's true to an extent. But I think that for all the fans that just stole James Dolan this, James Dolan that, I'll ask our listeners, you legitimately, for all the guys that want to just blame Dolan, blame this, blame that, sell the team, you tell me what it is that you think he's done wrong. And I'm being serious, because I have my own feeling, you have your own feeling, but there's so many fans out there that have no idea what they think he's done wrong. They just listen to the media say, he stinks, or they listen to LeBron say he stinks. I'll tell you what I think changed this. And you just said, what was the last impact player the New York Knicks drafted, right? I'm going to tell you the last impact player the New York Knicks drafted never even put on a New York Knicks uniform. Do you know who that was?
I'm drawing a blank now, but you can...
The New York Knicks drafted Nene out of Brazil with the number 6 pick, I believe it was, and on draft day, after taking him, packaged him with Marcus Camby to the Denver Nuggets for one, Mr. Antonio McDice. That is the trade, in my opinion, that sunk the last 20 years. Because that right then and there would have been the power forward of the future mixed with the center of the future. And don't think for one second, that's when it all turned around for Denver as well. Think about it, man. Think all the way back to that day. Antonio McDice didn't even play a game his first, year and a half as a Knick, because he blew out his knee in preseason? Yeah. Think about that. Think about that trade. No one ever remembers it. I always say the most impactful.
You can see I don't remember it.
Yeah.
Now that you refresh my memory, I'm like, yeah, you're right.
The most impactful trade the New York Knicks made over the last 20 years, or the most impactful draft pick they had over the last 20 years was Nene Hilario. And it was the biggest mistake they ever did, trading him and Marcus Camby for what people thought. I mean, even if you did land Antonio McDyess, he was already past his prime. He was already having all the knee injuries, man. He was done. And that's why when Lloyd tells you this New York Knicks front office never makes the right decision, those are the kind of moves that he's telling you about. Michael Sweetney over instead of Amari Stoudemire. Trading Nene Hilario after getting the pick right, you trade him with Cam. Those are the kind of moves, decisions that this team has made. Jordan Hill, in a year where everyone fully expected them to trade up and land Steph Curry, because remember, Donnie Walsh's right-hand man was running the Minnesota Timberwolves and had two top six picks. And everyone knew the Knicks were going to trade up, and for some reason, some strange reason, they never pulled the trigger. Donnie Walsh, everybody. Me and Lloyd can keep going all day.
Yeah. Now, the Knicks had a 17-65 record and only provided a 14% chance to win a lottery, tying them with the Phoenix Suns and the Cleveland Cavaliers as part of the newly implemented structure for this draft, all right? Speaking of the draft, Matt, Mike, real quick, I just want to say, to me, that's a bunch of malarkey. I get them the NBA trying to prevent teams from tanking, but I brought this up to somebody while I was traveling on a train, Matt Mike. What the NBA should do is the three worst teams in the NBA, right? The team with the best record of those three worst teams should have the biggest chance to earn the number one selection.
I agree with you. Instead of 14%, hey, you have 22%, you have 20%, you have 18%. It doesn't have to be such a wide margin like it used to be, but there's no reason for it to be equal. I'm with you 100%. And the other thing is, I know that they want to prevent tanking. There's a reason why the NFL doesn't do it. There's a reason why the MLB doesn't do it. There's a reason, you know, hockey does a lottery, but, you know, hockey has changed a lot of the things they do because they've had to. The problem I have with the NBA, opposed to other sports, only five players on a court at one time. If you haven't seen the importance of one player over the last 20 years, look at LeBron James. Look at what Cleveland turned into when he left. Look at what Miami turned into when he left. If you don't think one player can change the course of history, then you're not paying attention to basketball. And realistically, the worst team in the NBA should get the first pick. Let them get it wrong, but don't rob them of the chance to get the very best player.
And great point. And also with the fact, man, Mike, that players are teaming up now to form like these mega teams.
Yeah, and dude, I'm not saying this because the Knicks have the pick. I've been saying this for a very, very long time. Think about Kevin Durant. You know what I mean? Look at what Kevin Durant. Yeah, Golden State was great. But I always say this to people. Remember something. Golden State went 6 games and 7 games. They played 13 total games in 2 years and split the finals, right, with the Cleveland Cavaliers over 2 years. Everyone says he joined a ready-made team. Look at what one player does in the NBA. They went 8-1 against LeBron James Cavs with Kevin Durant. Think about that.
Yeah, and
prior to that, in the 2 years they went. I believe it was 7-5 against. I'm lying to you. It was. They were. What, one game better? It was. I don't know, man.
The crazy part, man, Mike, is the Chicago Bulls and the Atlanta Hawks. They have 12.5% and 10% odds to win the first pick, respectively, and not far behind the Washington Wizards and the Memphis Grizzlies hold a strong position as well. So while previous years resulted in a team with the highest odds favored, the Knicks will need lottery luck. Patrick Ewing to represent them at this draft. And it's good luck. Hopefully it's a good luck charm. And, you know, hopefully we can replicate that success from years ago.
Listen, if the Rangers could win the lottery, or basically come up aces in the lottery, so can the Knicks.
So, you know, listen, there are talented players in this draft beyond Zion Williamson and Ja Morant, but the top players, you know, they've been defined for 6 months. And that gives 86% chance for someone like, for R.J. Barrett, Jared Culver, or DeAndre Hunter become the pick. And let's also throw out this scenario, Mad Mike. Let's throw this scenario. Let's just say the Knicks do get the number one pick or the number two pick. Like I was saying, there's reports that the Pelicans are gathering information on Knicks players. And we all know about the Lakers' failed attempt to trade for Anthony Davis at the February deadline. But somewhat lost in all that drama is the fact that the Knicks, before they moved Kristaps Porzingis to the Mavericks, they spoke with the Pelicans about Davis's availability.
KP, who got beat up in Latvia over the weekend? That KP?
That same KP. And surely a lot of teams kicked the tires about Anthony Davis, but the Knicks also still have a unique asset in their pocket to offer. And that's a potential number one or number two pick in this year's draft.
To be honest, Lloyd, I don't even think they need the number one or two pick like everybody's saying. To me personally, what the Knicks offer that no one else can offer is the fact that the Pelicans can draft and build around whoever they want. All these other teams are saying, hey, here, like the Lakers, for example, right? Here's Melvin Ingram, 1 year left on his rookie deal. Here's Lonzo Ball, we still haven't figured out how to fix his jump shot. Oh, and he's 2 years away from free agency. Here's this guy, right? And if you're the Pelicans, you're saying, one, I've already lost years of development off these guys. None of them have looked like top five players, top five draft picks. Okay, is that fair to say? Whereas the Knicks can say, here's 1 year of Kevin Knox, who's only 19 years old. He's developed somewhat, but he's still raw. But if you're them, you're saying, I still got 3 years, and he's not too broken to the point where I can't fix him. And I have a top 2-3 draft pick. I can pick whoever
I
want.
And they have that number one pick from Dallas, too, Mad Mike.
Yes, and they can offer additional number one picks from Dallas, if they wanted to do it. So when people are like, Knicks can't give up anything. Yes, they can. They can give up the right for the Pelicans to choose who it is they want. If they want to choose between Barrett, Hunter, Culver, like you just said, they can do that. They're not waiting for a team to take a guy and then say, hey, take him. No.
Now here's the thing, man. According to Ian Bagley, who, you know, I follow a lot.
Bagels.
He was saying the Pelicans have quietly been gathering info on the Knicks lottery pick from a year ago, Kevin Knox, the player that you just mentioned, who could presumably be a part of a trade package along with the New York Knicks first-round pick this year, like you were saying. Doesn't necessarily have to be one or two. It could be three or four. They're getting a top-five pick.
Correct.
Okay, and the draft order will be revealed tomorrow, as we were saying, and the Cavs and the Suns, who joined the Knicks with the worst record in NBA, they all share a 14% chance, listeners, of getting that number one pick. And there's a possibility that none of them get the number one pick.
Yeah, you're so right about that, too. 100% chance. But that, I'm telling you, man, I don't think it's that bad. And not for nothing, man. Even if you want to say Frank Ntilikina or Dennis Smith Jr., if you're the Pelicans and you want to try to move on from Drew Holiday, I don't know if they can. I don't know what his contract looks like. I'm just, you know, spitballing here for you. But, you know, if you think you can move on from him, right, after moving on from AD, because it doesn't make sense to have one without the other if the idea was pairing them together, you know, wouldn't Dennis Smith Jr. be a nice little consolation prize for you? Kevin Knox, Dennis Smith Jr. and a number five pick, is that really that outrageous of an idea compared to Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and I don't know, Kyle Kuzma? Look, is it really that far, man, off of a...
If the Knicks were just going to get Anthony Davis on a potential one-year deal rental with nothing alongside
him...
No,
we know that.
You couldn't justify giving up so much young equity, right? We both agree with that. But when New York considered one of the favorites to land Kevin Durant and or Kyrie Irving, and one or two other big, you know, name free agents coming available this summer, whether it's Kawhi Leonard, who I don't think wants to have anything to do with New York. Kemba Walker, who I you know, I'm not a fan. Listen, Kemba Walker's a great player.
Let's be real. Number one, we're only concerning ourselves. Me personally, I'm only talking about tier one guys. I don't want nothing to do with tier two guys. We see how it goes down with tier two guys here. Have no interest in it whatsoever.
We all agree. Would you put Klay Thompson in that tier one, or will you just leave it Kyrie, KD, and Kawhi as tier one?
Here's the thing. I'll put Klay in there. I think that he gets a lot of flack because he's never had to be option A. But if you watch that game on Friday night, that's not a game if Klay Thompson isn't playing in the first half. You know what I mean? If Klay isn't doing what he's doing in the first half, Steph Curry never gets the opportunity in the second half to be great. You know what I mean? And people overlook that because they just want to see Klay's greatness Curry's greatness. Without Klay in that first half, there's no Curry. So, yeah, I think that I would put him in tier one. But here's the thing. I don't think he'd come here or go anywhere without a secondary player, whether it's the face whether he's a face and another guy comes or he comes as, you know, somebody's Robin.
Now, do you also think that it's going to take Kyrie for KD to come here? Because we both talked about this, Mad Mike. In both of our eyes, and correct me if I'm wrong, the best case scenario for the Knicks would be Kawhi and KD. And just think if the Knicks got Kawhi, KD, and drafted Ja Morant, man, Mike.
I was just going to tell you, if we got the second overall pick and took Ja, and that kind of, you know, rubs Kyrie the wrong way. First of all, Kyrie's, I'm not going to say he's got limited options, but let's be real, he's got limited options. Now that everybody knows the Boston Celtics players hate him, I mean, we're talking about Lev Bell, Pittsburgh Steeler type relationship right now. When I say he loses a lot of leverage, I mean, he loses a lot of leverage in the fact that he can now dictate who he wants to play with or the terms of his agreement. Like, hey, you're going to trade this guy. I'm not going to share the ball with this guy, blah, blah, blah. I told you already, my plan would be drafting Ja Morant, and I'm signing Kawhi Leonard, and I'm signing Kevin Durant.
And you mean to tell me if that scenario happens for the New York Knicks, to me, Mad Mike, that automatically puts them ahead of these teams that were actually in the playoffs, Indiana Pacers, the Brooklyn Nets, the Orlando Magic. If Kawhi leaves Toronto, Toronto is a completely different team because he's single-handedly carrying that team right now.
Listen, so check this out. So check this out, right? Since we're on the topic of that. If Kyrie, we know Kyrie is leaving Boston. He's not coming back. The only way he stays is if they trade and gut the entire team for Anthony Davis. Not going to happen, right? We all know it's not going to happen. If Kyrie, let's say Kyrie goes back to LA with LeBron, I'm just getting him out of the East. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm just getting him out of the East, right? Boston is significantly worse, in my opinion, right? Now, if you drafted Ja Morant, signed KD, and took Kawhi away from Toronto, Toronto's irrelevant. So you just jumped all those teams that we spoke about, that you just mentioned. You're definitely jumping the Celtics without Kyrie. You're then jumping the Raptors because you took their best player and defender away from them. And the only team left to contend with would be Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia can't keep Tobias Harris and Jimmy Butler. And I have this strange feeling after this playoffs, especially the way that the young guy struggled, that Jimmy's bolting for a team like the Lakers to play with a guy like LeBron who settles for nothing less than 100% high effort. So let's say even if they lose one of those guys, now they're weaker. And you're assuming that they're going to be able to keep Ben Simmons long term, which I would kind of question that myself. The only team that really is going to contend with the Knicks or be a thorn in their side over the next 4 years is Milwaukee.
Agreed. I was just about to say the same exact thing. The only team. Even if they lose Chris Middleton to free agency, they're still, that would be, you know, they're the one team that the Knicks
but
would
they,
have.
If they lose, see, that's the thing, Lloyd. If they lose them, it's not because they don't have the money. They have the money to keep them. So it's not like they can't replace them either. And that's why I'm saying I think Kyrie's leaving, because if Kyrie's looking at his chances with the Celtics, the Celtics, they don't have those draft picks anymore. There's no New Jersey net deal, Brooklyn net deal coming to clean out their cap and allow them to get, you know, three top freaking five draft picks. That's not happening anymore. That's over. So now what? Now what do you do when you have no cap space because Gordon Hayward is taking up a max deal? This guy's got pretty close to max money, good money, Al Horford. Well, what do you do, man? Now, you're not getting better, and I think Kyrie is reading the tea leaves on that. And once you do get better, don't you got to start paying guys like Jaylen Brown? Don't you got to start paying guys like Jason Tatum?
Yeah, I think so. How are you getting better? Agent too?
Yep. No, they just paid him.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah. So, but that's what I'm saying. So now what? At the end of the day, you're paying these teams. You got to pay these players, and because you got to pay these players, how are you getting better? I think he sees that.
I mean, look, obviously, the lottery is Tuesday, so in the next show, we're going to do a mock draft. We're going to do our first mock draft. It's only fitting, because we'll do a top 10 mock draft pick.
We'll know who's
picked where in the top 10, so we'll do our very first mock draft for the first 10 picks in the NBA. But before we go to break and talk some more NBA playoff basketball, Mad Mike, let's talk about the Lakers hire, as they hire Frank Vogel as their new head coach. And to me, Frank Vogel wasn't likely the Lakers' top choice for head coach. I heard Monty Williams turned him down and took the Phoenix Suns job, and Tyronn Lue walked away because they said they gave him a low ball offer.
He also had his feelings hurt because they didn't want to be wrong between Ty Lue and Monty Williams. So they never made an offer to Monty Williams. They interviewed him, they liked him, but they never wanted to be the team that chose between two. Kind of like I was just talking about the Knicks. I don't want the Knicks to be the team that has to choose between player A or B. Let them just pick from whoever's left. That's how the Lakers handled it. They just wanted to pick from whoever was left. And then they made a low ball offer. But I'm going to tell you this. That low ball offer, If you want to be fair, it's not really a lowball offer, man. They offered him 3 years, $18 million. It's a $6 million contract. That's on par with what most coaches are making. And 3 years. They're only trying to give three-year deals because once LeBron James is gone, at the end of his final 3 years of his contract, you want the ability to start over fresh. You don't want to ever. No team is ever looking at LeBron James and saying, I'm going to let you do to us what you did to Cleveland. Cleveland's stuck in so many bad contracts. Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love. I mean, think about it. Why would you want to hire anybody for the sake of building around and coaching LeBron, and then when he's gone in 3 years, you're stuck with this guy, Ty Lue, who, by the way, didn't even make it through his first year without. Is he that good of a coach? He didn't make it through his first year without LeBron. Frank Vogel, I don't know, man. I don't know if he's good.
Speaking of Vogel, the Lakers hired him on a three-year deal to replace Luke Walton, who left for the Sacramento Kings after the Lakers had a 37-win season. And they pursued Monty Williams, again, like I said, who chose the Suns, and Tyronn Lue walked away. So the key takeaway isn't necessarily which coach the team chose to hire, it's who specifically led the coach and making that final recommendation, Matt Mike. And would you like to take a guess on who that person is?
Go ahead, shoot.
Kirk Rambis. Kirk Rambis. We all know it. Listen, he was with the Knicks, listeners. Awful. Awful. Awful.
Yeah, his wife is supposed to be like special assistant to Jeannie Buss or something like
yes.
that, right?
So supposedly, there's reports that he had a hand in them hiring Frank Vogel, and then they added Jason Kidd to the staff, Matt Mike, which I'm surprised Jason Kidd took the job to be an assistant.
I'm not. There's been word around the league, Lloyd, that he's tried to usurp power in both of his head coaching jobs. The reason he left Brooklyn, remember the reason Lawrence Frank quit? His staff, and the reason he left his Brooklyn contract early was because he thought he was going to get more power in Milwaukee, and apparently he was being blackballed for his actions. Listen, we say this all the time. You can piss off a millionaire. Don't piss off billionaires.
Yeah, I also want to throw in, it's unclear how LeBron James feels about this hire, especially after the team scuttled negotiations with somebody who he probably wanted to be his coach, which is Tyronn Lue. And outside of Eric Spoelstra, the Miami Heat, only Lue has coached James to the NBA championship. And we say, how good is he? Because after James left, he got fired. And the Lakers obviously need their star player to bond the Vogel system. So that's something to monitor over the coming year. And LeBron James is not known to want to be okay with buying in to a system. He wants things his way.
Yeah, one thing I say about Frank Vogel is guys like Paul George absolutely loved him. You know what I mean? Like, absolutely loved him. So when I look at him, I'm like, if he was good enough for Paul George, he better be good enough for LeBron James. But I do agree with you. As far as you know, finding the coach, the right guy to be able to, you know, coach LeBron James. But LeBron James at this point in his career, you know, he needs to worry about on the court, and he's got to let coaches do their thing. He's got to understand things. And you might disagree with me. I don't know if you agree or disagree with me. It's the first time I'm saying this to you. But as a coach, you're only as good as the locker room wants you to be. You're only as good as what your players make you. And if you lose the locker room, then you're going to be a terrible coach. LeBron James has to let him come in and coach. LeBron James has to understand that he's got a lot of young guys on this roster, a lot of young guys that are supposed to be really good. And if you I'll take Brandon Ingram, for example. You don't think Brandon Ingram has the same kind of frame and game that somebody like Paul George, for example, somebody that this guy nurtured, Frank Vogel nurtured, brought along, and helped develop. If you don't see the potential there, then you deserve to be, you know, clown your final 3 years in the league. You don't deserve to go to the playoffs and win basketball games. You know what I mean? In my opinion. Just don't.
We'll see what happens. You know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And then not only that, now you're trying to get players to come there, so the players have to like Frank Vogel.
Yeah, but here, one last thing for me on this hire. I do like the Jason Kidd signing because Lonzo Ball reminds me of Jason Kidd early on, where he couldn't shoot the ball. He came in, great court vision, could drive the ball, get to the hoop. But Jason Kidd will mean a lot to Lonzo Ball. And hopefully with the way this whole, you know, big baller brand stuff collapsed on him, he cuts his pops out of the deal, and you know, we don't got to deal with that LeVar, you know, kind of controversy anymore, or whatever you want to call it, distractions. And this will help the Lakers commit long term to Lonzo Ball.
So listeners, as always, me and the Mad Mike try to stay on top of things. So we'll keep you posted if things go on, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back from the break, listeners, we're going to talk some NBA playoffs as we're winding down to the Eastern Conference and Western. Well, we are in the Eastern Conference and Western Conference Finals. And we're going to talk a little bit of football because we had a listener want to question us about Cam Newton. And the Giants signed the offensive lineman, Mad Mike. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, we're going to continue the theme of basketball as there was some NBA playoffs being played. And Mad Mike, I was talking to a friend, and I think this has been some of the best playoff basketball that I've seen in a long time, Mad Mike. You had KD go down, and I was literally in a gym arguing with one of the trainers because he was saying Golden State is done without KD. And he was, and guess the first person I'm going to seek out when I walk into the gym on Monday is him. And I'm going to put my finger over my mouth with the shush sign and don't say anything else to me about basketball again. Don't do it. Let's face it. Are you talking about a team that won 73 games, man, Mike, before KD even joined? Are we talking about a team that knows how to play team basketball? Or that played team basketball before KD even joined? He had to fit into the style that they play. And when he went down, listen, not taking anything away from Kevin Durant. All right, hell of a basketball player. But Golden State, they know how to play basketball without Kevin Durant because they've done it before. And they showed it by finishing off the Houston Rockets. And like you said, it's time to blow that team up, man. I don't know what direction Houston goes in, Matt Mike. But like you said, the team that they have now is not gonna get it done. It's not gonna happen. So you gotta surround. I mean, you have James Harden, you know, you have PJ Tucker, who I absolutely love, and you have Eric Gordon. But then, like you said, you have a bunch of dudes that's probably on their way out the door. And Capella. They signed Capella. But let's face it, Clint Capella's not a game-changing. He's not a game-changing player.
They got $80 million a year tied up in Chris Paul and James Harden. People don't realize that. Those guys are making supermax contracts. They're not making max contracts. They're making the supermax right now. Chris Paul, probably the most devious person in all of the NBA, and he gives us more and more evidence of that every time. Remember, negotiated this whole new CBA that didn't really do anything to benefit the players outside of the guys like himself and LeBron James and all these other guys that are, you know, basically out the door and eligible for those $40 million a year contracts. He's 35 years old, 34 years old. Like I told you about, you know, before we jumped on, there was the rumor I heard that the Lakers might actually be in play for him. And before you say, hey, why would Houston move on? Well, realistically, Houston would move on because it would free up $40 million to give James Harden some younger players to keep this window open just a little while longer. Why would the Lakers do it? Well, he's got 3 years left on a max contract, the same as LeBron James. They have two max slots available to them. And none of us think that they're going to sign two guys. Nobody with this coaching search, they couldn't find anybody to coach the Lakers. Why would they be able to find players to come here? So I'm just saying that, you know, LeBron, if it was Jimmy, what if it was Jimmy, Chris Paul, and LeBron James? Is that enough to beat the Golden State Warriors, even if KD leaves? Maybe, maybe not. But it'll open that window, so I can see that happening. As far as the Warriors go, man, it's so amazing. Really, really was amazing to see them, you know, go back. They got away from that careless style of play that they've kind of got accustomed to over the last couple of years with KD. Not saying he's a careless player, but when you can out-talent teams to the extent that they were out-talenting teams, they played very lackadaisical at times. They, you know, you saw a lot of really bad passes, careless mistakes. You didn't see that in the second half, in the fourth quarter of that game five. You didn't see it on Friday night. You just didn't see it. You saw a more crisp team, more focused, and just you saw a team get after it. You really did. You really, really did. And it's good to see it. It's good for them to remind everybody. You know, I actually heard an interview on ESPN Sunday afternoon, Lloyd, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. A lot of people, they were saying that Steph is a victim of colorism, where because he's a light-skinned black guy, you kind of don't want to look at him like a dog. You know what I mean? You don't want to look at him like you have the field dude and then you have the house dude, right? And for some reason, he's not looked at as a field dude because of his skin color. Do you feel like that's true?
You know what? I do.
I'm only bringing it up to you. I guess I do.
I mean, you know, I mean, but, you know, I mean, not to get into that aspect of, you know, of a conversation, but that's the truth, Matt Mike. You know, I do think when I just hear about how the media talks about him and how the media views him, you don't really hear that. You know, you don't hear that about the darker outside of maybe, you know, even with LeBron James, he's criticized.
Yeah, no, I try to steer this. I don't like to bring up race, especially on the show, a lot. But it was said on ESPN, so I just figured,
And this is coming. I mean, I'm a light-skinned African-American. You know, and although there are things, tons of things I don't get away with because I am a black man, maybe there are some things that I do get away with because I'm a lighter-toned black man. It's a possibility. Who knows? But I'm not in a situation where I hear people talk about me as compared to other compared to my peers that are in my field of what I do. We hear this with Steph Curry. We hear this with other players in the NBA.
So, I agree with you. Bring it up to say that I don't care what anybody says about him. He proved to me that he's still that dude. You know what I mean? That's exactly what he proved to me in his last two games. He's still
Now, Mike, I think that with Kevin Durant being the type of player that Kevin Durant is, and he's a ball dominant player, Steph Curry kind of played the side. He played the side. He played the role.
And the other reason they brought it up is because they were saying, he blocked out some time for a shoot around. He's playing injured. He's trying to get some time to work out before game six. And CP3 got word of it. And like I said, once again, proving to us how classless he is, got word of it and basically kicked him off the court and took up, shot over to the court and took up the entire full court. Wouldn't even give him a half court to work on his game, work through some stuff ahead of game six. And that's what they were saying. Does colorism play, a role in that? Do you think he's soft because of how he looks? And if he was anybody else, CP3 have tried to...
Chris Paul not having great sportsmanship?
Well, that's what they were saying. If it's Draymond, do you do that to him? And then I thought, I was listening, and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, they're not wrong. Klay Thompson is light-skinned. You know what I mean? And Steph Curry is light-skinned.
But you also have to go into the fact that Steph and Klay are better players than Draymond Green. So maybe you won't be that mad at Draymond Green taking jump shots or working out.
No, you're right. But what I'm saying is, what they were saying is you trying to Debo Draymond Green. No, you're not. But those two, you probably are trying to Debo them. And they lack respect. When we talk about Golden State, we're talking about a team that's won the championship 3 out of the last 4 years. You never talk about them with the tougher teams. You never say that they had that, that they're tough. You say that they're a jump shooting finesse team. Why is that?
Yeah, well.
Anyway, I changed the whole, changed the whole complex of the conversation.
It's all good. But listen, we still have a lot. And look, Milwaukee just dismantled Boston.
Yeah.
And Giannis Antetokounmpo, man, whew. I don't necessarily know if he's going to win the MVP award, but sometimes MVP awards are based on your performance in the playoffs, even though it shouldn't be. But if the writers include that, does our good friend Joe Rivera, does he get a vote or no?
Nah, he gets a vote in baseball, not in basketball.
Okay. I mean, it'd be curious to see, who he thinks. Have you talked to him about who he would give the...
Oh, Giannis. He'll tell you the same thing that we tell you. He'll tell you the same exact thing we tell you about James Harden. When you shoot the ball at the rate he shoots the ball, you're supposed to average 36 points. You know what I mean? When you average 29 shots a game... You better be, or 28 shots a game, you better be averaging 36 points. That doesn't make you, that style of play, man, we got to talk about that too. Maybe we talk about it at a later date, but, can that style of ball win a championship? We keep getting the emphatic no, but they refuse to change their style.
Not only that, man, Mike, there was a game or two, the games that Milwaukee lost, if you go back and look at the games that Milwaukee lost to the Celtics, I thought that Giannis tried to do too much on his own. But the games that they won, Milwaukee got back to the style of basketball that had them earn the best record in the Eastern Conference, and that was team basketball. And when Giannis plays team basketball, and I get it, sometimes you get caught up in a moment, and maybe somebody reeled him in and was like, look, man, let's get back to doing what got us here. Let's get back to what makes this team or has made this team successful. When they play team basketball, they are probably the only team, Matt Mike, that I think could beat the Golden State Warriors as good as the Golden State Warriors are. Because they bring something different to the table that Golden State doesn't have. We said, I think they're a tougher basketball team. Like, we were just saying how Golden State is more of a finesse basketball team? Milwaukee, they're bulldogs. They're bulldogs. But they can finesse you as well. They can finesse you as well. Is Steph Curry a bulldog? No. Is he a finesse player? I would say that he is. Some people may disagree with me. Is Klay Thompson a bulldog? No. Is he a finesse player? I would categorize him as a finesse player. Now, I would say Andre Iguodala might be somewhat of a bulldog, and Kevin Durant could be classified as both. But let's look at Drew Bledsoe. Let's look at Giannis. Chris Middleton. I just think that they, you know, it's like when you have a team that does want, you know, some that have strengths and some things and weaknesses and others. That's the case. I think that, you know, Milwaukee's not that much as much of a finesse team as Golden State is. And Golden State is not of a bulldoggish team as Milwaukee is.
You know why? The only thing I'm going to tell you, I disagree. I think, honest to God, I believe this wholeheartedly. I think that Golden State can beat you any which way they have to. And I'll give you a perfect example. Kevin Durant is healthy. We're talking about a 7-footer playing small forward. Draymond Green is a dog. We know he's a dog. Boogie Cousins insists that he will be 100% back by the Western Conference Finals. So that means he should
I didn't know he was coming back. But now you're talking about players whose mentality is classify as bulldogs.
That's what I'm saying. So all of a sudden, I think we're talking about a team that's tougher. Another bulldog, another guy that I don't think gets credit for being a bulldog, but is a bulldog, is Sean Livingston. Sean Livingston isn't one of these finesse players. Sean Livingston goes down there, he bangs, he backs you down, and he uses his length on defense as well as on offense. I think that they have some dogs, like you said, Andre Iguodala. He's not the same player, but I still think he's got some dog in him. I think that Golden State has enough dogs to give Milwaukee a run. The question is, does Golden State have a good enough bench to play does Golden State have a good enough bench to play with Milwaukee's bench if Milwaukee starters can keep it close? If they can keep it close, that's where I think they're going to see some problems, meaning Golden State, because those benches are nothing alike. Milwaukee can rely on their bench.
The scenario I was throwing out was, who do I think would be able to beat Golden State if that was to happen? I don't necessarily think Milwaukee was a goal against Golden State. I don't think they would beat them. But I think they're the one team out of the Eastern Conference that could beat
them. You're right. I'm not a believer in Philadelphia. I think Philadelphia has shown you this entire playoffs that not only can you not trust them, but, I mean, you know, you have a superstar center, calling the coach at 6 o'clock in the morning talking about, I can't play today in a playoff game. Yeah, we got problems, you know what I mean? I don't care what anybody does.
And then, like I said, if you don't get production out of Kawhi in Toronto, then who else do they have?
Yeah, no, it's. I'm telling you, man, I'm just saying, you're right. I think Milwaukee is the best bet to knock them off. We'll see.
We have a lot more basketball to talk about. But let's talk about a little bit of football now, Mike. As the New York Giants have their right tackle in place, as they signed veteran offensive lineman Mike Remmers, they agreed in principle to a one-year, $2.5 million deal on Saturday, and that could be worth up to $4 million based on potential incentives. Now, Remmers provides the Giants, in my opinion, with the last piece of their offensive line puzzle, a starting right tackle. And we talked about Cody Ford, and we talked about some tackles in this draft. The Giants didn't draft a tackle to what, the seventh round? To the seventh round. Now, I just want to just base listeners that may not be familiar with Mike Remmers on some things. Now, he's recovering from an undisclosed injury. And it took months for him to join the Giants because of his inability to pass a physical. What's causing him not to pass a physical? Nobody knows. Because it's disclosed. But it was
I was just going to say, 1 year, $2.5 million deal for a starting tackle. obviously, if he's agreeing to that kind of contract, either he doesn't believe, and I'm talking about Mike Remmers, he doesn't believe that he's fully healthy, and two, he doesn't believe that he has a lot left in the tank. That's one of those deals for a veteran where it's just like, I'm holding on, dude. I'm trying to max out. I'm trying to get that last, you know, $2 million deal to put in my daughter's bank account for her wedding day and college tuition, et cetera. That's what that told me. I could be wrong, but that's what that told me.
He also has a history with Shermer, Shula, and Gettleman. And Gettleman brought Rimmers in while he was serving with the Carolina Panthers. And Alignman went on to star for three seasons during that time, but Mike Shula was his offensive coordinator, so there's a significant amount of familiarity there. However, Rimmers, you know, he also played against Denver, and he got torched in that game, in that Super Bowl game.
Yep.
Torched! He got eaten. I think he gave up two sacks and a bunch of pressures. But maybe he's going to play with a chip on his shoulder, Mad Mike. And he's long been considered a bit of an underdog. He didn't get a scholarship out of high school. You know, he had to walk on to college at Oregon State. And if history, you know, repeats itself, he was undrafted in the 2012 draft, signing with the Broncos as a rookie free agent. And he had to claw his way to the place where he's at now. So you're looking at the Giants offensive line as we speak right now, okay? You have Rimmers at one at the right tackle. Then you have Zitler at the guard. I'm assuming the Giants are going to have Jalapio at center. Then you have Will Hernandez. And I don't know why I always draw a blank on the other dude's name, man, Mike. Help me out. The guy who was in New England.
Nate Solder.
You have Nate Solder at left tackle. So there's an offensive line for this year for the New York Giants. Is that a great offensive line? No. Is it better than last year's offensive line? Yeah. How much better is it? I don't know. I don't know if it's significantly better. On paper, it is. But sometimes if it comes across on paper, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the actual fact. These guys have to get used to playing with each other. Zeitler's never played alongside Rimmers, who's never played alongside Jalapio. The only people that have played alongside each other is Nate Solder and Will Hernandez. And they only did it for 1 year.
Yeah.
Your offensive line has to be a cohesive unit, man, Mike. So just because you look on paper and say, oh, the Giants offensive line, they have better names there, that doesn't mean that that's going to translate into success. Doesn't mean it. I'm not trying to be the sour apple on the tree, listeners, but facts is facts. And I'm a Giants fan. I'm not 100% mad at the signing. Maybe they could catch lightning in a bottle and they could get some good play out of Rimmers. He's better than any other option we have. So I'm not mad at them taking a chance. But there's a lot more that goes into success of an offensive line unit than just names. But I will say, if they can gather some cohesiveness, this is a much better offensive line than the one they had last year. Much better, man, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it all turns out in the end for them. It can be better. I don't know if Mike Remmers gets an opportunity here. This feels more like a Jonathan Stewart signing to me. But in the end of the day, like you said, better names gives it gives better hype. It gives more security. It gives more comfortability about your line. And I think that they have a legitimate chance to be better this year. That's for sure. So we'll see what happens, man. I'm not going to knock it until we see the final product. Like you said, they did get Zeitler. Jalapio, I believe his name is, right? We'll see how he comes back.
I've heard it pronounced both ways.
We'll see, you know, how he comes back from a broken leg. That's no easy comeback. Not only that, but we're talking about a guy who, even when healthy, you know, it's not like somebody that was this.
He's
you know,
a converted center. He played
center.
Guard, Matt Mike, and he did a good job at guard, and then they moved him over to center. So that's not his natural position.
But that's what I'm saying. So it's like, and if one thing the Jets showed you last year, or the last 2 years actually, having a bad center can make it all fall apart. But you're hoping Hernandez, right?
Yeah, Will Hernandez, you talking about?
Yeah, on the left side, Hernandez,
yeah,
right?
Will and Hernandez, Zeidler, yeah,
on the left side. So Hernandez is going to be on the left side, and you're hoping having Zeidler on the right side, to what should be above average to at least above average, but we're hoping, you know, star type caliber guards really help bring along whoever your center is. So we'll see.
So we wanted to point that out there. That was a sign that the Giants made, but I was talking to a new listener, Mad Mike, and a new listener wanted us to talk about Cam Newton. All right, and our thoughts on Cam Newton. If we felt that Cam Newton was still a good quarterback, still a good NFL quarterback. And I start off by saying, Mad Mike, that Cam Newton may be overlooked, but I still think that Cam Newton is one of the NFL's best quarterbacks. He's a Heisman Trophy winner, most valuable player, who's played in Super Bowl 3 years ago, and he's widely regarded as one of the greatest overall athletes to ever play that position. And he's really mentioned in discussions about the best NFL quarterbacks, in my opinion. So why is that? Is it because he's an African-American? Or is it because he's just not that good in some people's eyes? So Newton's command of performance, you know, I think that, listen, he's a big dude. Big dude. Big athletic dude. And despite his success, Newton's faded from the forefront of NFL consciousness. And when lists of NFL elite quarterbacks get compiled, his name is never on that list. Does he have the slick precision of Aaron Rodgers? No. The age-defying brilliance of Tom Brady? No.
Does he have the offensive line that they've had?
No. I'm sorry, Matt Mike. What were you saying?
I said, does he have the offensive line like those guys have?
No. Great point.
Does he have the receivers like those guys have? No. And did Dave Gettleman not make it his business to usher out Steve Smith when he drafted Cam Newton? And he said that Steve Smith was not good to the clubhouse. He was not good to the development of one Cam Newton. One part of it is fine. Yeah, you don't want a strong personality. I don't get that part of it. Why wouldn't you want a strong personality in your locker room? I mean, Steve Smith wants the ball. If Steve Smith is great and he demands that Cam Newton be great, then I don't see what the big deal is. I can't imagine Steve Smith was going to give up he was going to give Cam a hard time, and Cam being the face of the franchise. Everybody knows the quarterback is. But at the same time, you saw it this year with Odell, and they wanted to draft Daniel Jones. Trading Odell was more about drafting Daniel Jones than it was anything Odell did. They didn't want him in that locker room. And like I said before, all you got to do is look to the person's history. Gettleman proved to you that he didn't want the wide receiver, diva wide receiver in the locker room while developing a young quarterback. And here's what I'll tell you. If Steve Smith was in that locker room, if he was running routes for the Carolina Panthers, the one knock on Cam Newton wouldn't be a knock today. The knock on Cam Newton is he relies heavily on his athleticism, and he doesn't perfect his craft. That's why his accuracy is still bad. That's why he overthrows a lot of balls, misses some of the easier throws because he makes easier mistakes, and that's lack of focus. And we can say whatever we want. If Steve Smith was his wide receiver, that wouldn't be the case.
Right, and look, like you said, his passing numbers on the league governed by Mon Wolfe passing numbers, they don't stand out. You know, his team isn't undefeated. He didn't just sign a monster contract. He's not returning from a major injury. There's nothing new at this point about Newton.
I mean, he's coming back from major injury, major shoulder.
I'm sorry. Yes, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me on that. And everyone has a case, against Cam Newton.
But I go back. As much as I said that about him, I did all that I just said about him, you tell me the one elite receiver Cam Newton has had the pleasure of throwing to. He's never had an elite receiver, and he's never had an elite offensive line. It's never been the case. I don't care what anybody tells me. He's lacking two major areas, and he's had an amazing running game.
His best receiver is his tight end. His best receiver is
his
tight end.
Over his career.
Yep.
Yeah. So let's be fair to him. It's not like he's not throwing. I mean, Kelvin Benjamin, are you kidding me? Kelvin Benjamin ate himself out of the freaking league. Ate himself out of the league. We're killing Cam Newton for that? Yeah, he just lost his A. And look, as a matter of fact, Devin Funchess. They didn't even re-sign Devin Funchess. That tells you exactly what they think of Devin Funchess, one. And it tells you what they think of Dave Gettleman. Dave Gettleman drafted Funchess in the second round, and he drafted Kelvin Benjamin in the first round. Just wanted to make Giant fans feel a little, you know, more comfortable with their GM. But I'm just saying, and, you know, if you ask me, like, there's a lack of weapons around him. Do I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league? I think he's tier two. I think he's a winner. But as far as I'm concerned, he's never going to be tier one.
The best quarterbacks is not a long list. It may be four or five dudes. And it's 32 teams in the NFL, listeners. And let's not forget, in 2015, Newton took over the NFL and the Panthers had a 15-1 record.
Correct.
15-1 record. His dominance doubled. Off the accident, he won an MVP award. And everyone agreed at that point, he's the best player in the NFL. And compare his numbers then to his numbers, you know, in 2015, he threw for over 3,800 yards, Matt Mike. Slightly under 60% completion percentage, 35 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. He had a quarterback rating of 99.4 and 636 rushing yards and 10 touchdowns. When's the last time you seen that? And he's still capable of doing that.
Yeah, but you want to know what? I think when he did it, the year he did it, I think everybody knew that he couldn't, that wasn't going to be sustainable from a usage, from a touches, from all of that. Like, so I think that people understood we just saw something special, but we didn't see anything that could be duplicated from his game perspective, like what he's capable of doing. And I think that's true. I think when you look at it now, I don't think he'll ever duplicate that again. I think that was a magical season for them. That's it. It doesn't take away from him, but I don't think I don't think Cam can duplicate it again. But once again, I think that he's ill-equipped to do so. Some of it's on him. Some of it's on, you know, the talent around him. I mean, they still got a really bad offensive line. They got no pass rush. There's a lot of things going on there, man.
I still think he has one of the strongest arms in NFL. I think he's accurate enough. But his ball placement, like you said, it lags behind the NFL best passes. He'll hit his receiver, but it might not be in stride or over the numbers. You know, it's why Carolina has employed big targets like Funchess to a certain extent. But those aren't top receivers.
But large receivers like Benjamin and Funchess, what do? It's the same knock on the New York Jets. That's why I say you have no idea what Sam can do. Those guys rarely create space. So when he constantly has a tight window to throw into like he does, how do we know how accurate he is? It's not like we're talking about a guy that's throwing into 2-yard windows. He just doesn't have that either at the same time. So it's like, you know, if most of his passes are contested simply because his receivers don't create space, yeah, that also leads to inaccuracy. We're not looking at how bad he misses when we look at accuracy numbers. We're just looking at the amount of passes he throws that are complete versus incomplete. And, I just think that if we're being honest about it, his receiver, is the type of receiver that they've surrounded him with, is part of the problem. I'm all over the place with Cam Newton because I think Cam has the ability to be elite, to be great. But I think that he's, you know, at the same time, he doesn't put in as much work on his craft, and I don't think they surround him. So I think that there's I think if both parties, meaning his front office and himself, actually put in the work, that he could become great again.
Yeah, I think Newton's greatest attributes don't align with how the best quarterbacks are judged, Matt Mike, like his toughness. This dude risks his body and absorbs punishment and more hits than any quarterback in the NFL.
That's my choice.
His powerful running is his powerful running is an asset. So when the other quarterbacks slide, Newton, let's face it, Cam frequently does that. He'll bull forward or dive ahead for extra yards. So he's made something stronger than other quarterbacks. He's 6'5", 245. And that should count his favor, not just make him stand apart. But quarterbacks are judged on their passing ability, Matt Mike. Which means one of the greatest weapons Newton possesses, which, you know, what makes him unique, will be discounted. And it can change the game as much as, you know, on the money. Like you said, over the numbers, over the middle, down deep. You know, and even when he doesn't carry the ball, I still think that Cam Newton presents, he's still a threat. And he creates space and opportunity for his cast of skilled players that he really doesn't have. Christian McCaffrey may be the best skilled player that he's had, you know, that he has on the team right now. And we, like you said, Newton has always carried the talent around him. Never vice versa. Never vice versa. If you want to look at Patrick Mahomes, he's surrounded by Travis Kelce, Kareem, you know, Tyreek Hill. He has weapons. And like we said, will we ever see Newton duplicate those numbers in 2015? Probably not. And the Panthers are always an overlooked contender, led by overlooked quarterback, in my opinion.
Well, you know, not for nothing, Lloyd. When you blow like they did, where they started the year 6-2 and missed the playoffs. So well, you know, you got to think about that too. When you do things like that, you know, they also have a coach that is every other year on the hot seat. There's a lot of things that just make you say, like, damn. Yeah, they're always a contender, but at the same time, I mean, you know. He's got a couple division titles, right? At 8-8. I mean, we're talking about a guy that's won his division multiple occasions at 9-7, 8-8. It's not like we're talking about, you know, a world beater either. That's the thing about numbers. I'm a 4-time division champion, right? But how many times did you win a bad division?
Yeah.
But I do get what you're saying. You know, he plays in a division. In the South, where Matt Ryan gets all this credit, and outside of being in a pass-happy offense, when it comes to wins and losses, his record is no better, no worse than Cam Newton. Why are we calling him elite and not Cam? He plays in a division with Drew Brees, where if you look at their numbers, Drew's won a Super Bowl, and Cam has been to one. But at the same time, their numbers are pretty much even, right? Outside of, you know, I'm talking about wins and losses, division titles and stuff like that. So I'm with you. I don't know, man.
How many teams are in the NFL, man? Like, is it 32?
30, right?
30. All right, let's just say 30 teams in the NFL. You mean to tell me you wouldn't take him over, say, 20 quarterbacks that are currently starting in the NFL right now?
Hell yeah! I probably take him over. I probably take him over 22 of them.
Right. I may even push the envelope and say 25.
Listen. Let me be very clear. Before last year's draft of Sam Darnold, I'm probably telling you right now, I wish he was a Jets quarterback. And with the draft pick of Daniel Jones, I'm probably sure almost every Giant fan out there would tell you that they wish he was their quarterback right now today.
I mean, I wish I could say I wish anybody was a damn quarterback, but I, you know, then that would be probably putting the Giants in a worse situation than what they are right now.
I'm just saying, I don't think it's a stretch. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not over here trying to knock him. Like I said, he's a polarizing guy because you could look at Cam Newton and you could see Cam Newton from both spectrums. You can look at him as a guy that doesn't perfect his craft, and his struggles are his own fault. Or you could look at him and say, hey, man, this guy has, you know, he could be just as good as anybody if you give him just as much to work with as anybody else. He's never had Odell Beckham. What would he look like in, what would his stats be for the New York Giants if he was a quarterback and Eli wasn't?
Yeah.
It should tell you what the league thinks of him. I can guarantee you that Odell Beckham wouldn't have been asking for a trade if you know, Cam was his quarterback.
Long story short, and Paul was the one that asked us to brought that up, so thanks for, you know, challenging us with this one, Paul. But, I still give Cam his props. I still think Cam has it. You know, I still think Cam is a top tier quarterback, not an elite quarterback, but definitely a top tier quarterback in the NFL. Definitely.
What is there right now? One, maybe two elite quarterbacks in all of the NFL right now today.
Yo, would you say like Tom Brady, Drew Brees? You know,
I don't even say Drew Brees. I don't even say Drew Brees. I say Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady right now today. I don't. Did you see how Drew Brees finished this season? Did you see the dud he laid up in the playoffs and down the stretch of the season? Is that elite? Or is that a guy that needs everything to go his way for him to be absolutely great?
But see, that's the thing. If you are, you know, people argue that case, Matt Mike. If they argue the case that they put Drew Brees, which people do put Drew Brees in that elite, you know what I'm saying? They put him in, and you know that they do.
That's fine, but you know, he's still elite.
I'm just saying,
if we're saying,
and I'm agreeing with you, that he might not be elite, then to me, that puts him in that class with Cam Newton. And even if I put Drew Brees up there with Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, let's just say I do, because I think he's on that borderline. I don't put Matt Ryan up there. I don't put him up there.
But that's why I listed his quarterbacks in his division. You know what I mean? Tampa Bay, I didn't even bother because Tampa Bay have a quarterback. I mean, that you know what I mean? Like, so I don't even think it's that.
So I say Aaron Rodgers, okay? And this is just, I say Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Pat Mahomes. Not Pat Mahomes is elite, but I'm just talking about quarterbacks that I would probably take over Cam Newton right now. And then to me, in my opinion, it would be Cam Newton next. Only because of what he brings to the table. And like you said, when does Cam Newton has weapons? Listeners, like Matt, we are breaking it down for you. Matt Mike is throwing all that out. If you get him some weaponry, who knows what we might be putting him up in that elite quarterback status. We just might. And like Matt Mike said, one of the knocks is that he doesn't, you know, he may not perfect his craft as much as he should. But that has to come from within. He's a talented young man. No doubt about that.
And he's won everywhere he's been.
No doubt about that. But but to become elite, you need more than just talent. Got to put that hard work in. I'm not saying Cam Newton is not putting in hard work, and I'm not saying he's not working hard to be a better player. Not saying that at all. Me and Matt Mike are not saying that at all, because we're giving him props of saying that we would take him over 25 quarterbacks in the NFL, maybe more than that. I just named 4 quarterbacks that I would take over him. And then he would be next.
I'd take Andrew Luck over him, too.
Yeah, you know what? I don't know. I don't know. You would take him. I would take Cam Newton over Andrew Luck. I would take him over Andrew Luck because of what he brings to the table.
This is where reverse racism comes in. What does he bring to the table more than Andrew Luck?
Well, obviously, he's more athletic. He's more tough.
Not necessarily true. They ran the same exact 40 at the combine. Same exact 40. Andrew Luck's white, so we don't look at him as being more athletic.
Well, here's the thing. If they was to run right now, I don't think he would outrun Cam Newton in a race. At this particular point right now, I don't think he's faster than Cam Newton right now. Andrew Luck has suffered some injuries.
Yeah, to his top half, not his bottom half.
Well, I'm just saying, when you look at their mobility, he's
no... And I'll say this. He's 2 years removed from his shoulder injuries, whereas, or going into the season, he'll be 2 years removed from his shoulder injuries, where Cam Newton is now going to go through his shoulder injuries, his surgery, and everything else. So Andrew Luck is now has been through what Cam is going through. So I'd still take Andrew Luck over.
Yeah, I mean, we have to. I guess we'll agree to disagree because I'll stick with Cam on that. I just think that, you know, I like Cam brings more to the table. Andrew Luck, passing ability-wise, yes, I'll take Andrew Luck over Cam Newton. And maybe his ability to see the field, which is two big things when it comes to quarterbacks. But it's not like Cam Newton is not, it's not like he's awful with seeing the field or visioning what he sees when he's dropping back in the pocket. But I like Cam Newton's toughness. I would just, me personally, I would take Cam Newton over Andrew Luck. And there's probably tons of listeners and football fans that would take Andrew Luck over Cam Newton. I wouldn't. I just, you know, I would, the four guys that I named are the only four dudes that I would take over Cam Newton.
I'd take Russell Wilson over Cam Newton.
Again, to me, that's debatable as well. But I can see, I'm not going to completely be like, that's outrageous. Just like I'm not saying Andrew Luck is outrageous. So, you know, that could be something that, you know, it's a matter of opinion. And also, I mean, it becomes a matter of opinion. You know, people start to throw out numbers and all that other kind of stuff. And then that becomes a whole other ball game.
I'm just saying this. I'm saying this without the benefit of numbers in front of me.
No, but that's what I'm saying. I can see why I could be like, okay, you know, that's your opinion. I'm not mad at you saying you would take Russell Wilson and Andrew Luck over Cam Newton, but I still would take Cam Newton over both them dudes. I would. And I'm sure there might be another quarterback or two that you might say the same thing about.
Maybe.
You know, if we went through all, you know, all the starters, but the bottom line is these, if we're talking about, you know, that's five or six guys we just named. There's 30 teams.
That's what I said. I would put him. He's somewhere in my top eight or so quarterbacks right now.
So I mean, if he's in that top 10, he's still, in our opinion, he's still a relevant player. He would be in my top five. And I'm not just basing, you know, numbers and all that. I'm just talking about as far as where I view him, and if I owned the team, the players, the quarterbacks that I would take over him.
Here's what I would say to you. Would you rather have him over Dak Prescott, who's asking the Dallas Cowboys for $30 million a year?
Yeah, I would rather Cam Newton over Dak Prescott. Yeah.
So I'm just saying. So just think about these things. Think about where the league is with their quarterbacks. Think about the quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins, who's about to get $30 million. You know what I mean? And when you like really, really take these things into account, how bad is Cam? I would rather have Cam. So there's ways to look at it, and that's one way I choose to look at it. You know, I just brought up the division titles, right? One of the reasons Dak wants to get paid is he's won two division titles. Well, he's won two division titles during a really down era for the NLE, the NFC East.
Yeah, oh my gosh, NFC East.
And save the nonsense of Philadelphia winning the Super Bowl. It's been a down era for the NFC East. And I'll say this.
It used to be the strongest division in football.
Yeah, so that's all I'm saying. So when you start looking at the guys that are looking for major money, I still would prefer to have Cam. I would still prefer to pay Cam.
And there you have it, listeners. But we get to the point of the show now where we let Mad Mike go on his rant. So, man, Mike, what rant do you have for the week, brother?
I can't believe I'm about to defend this man. J.A. Happ. But I'm just going to say it very briefly. D. Gordon, he ain't trying to end your career. He didn't throw at your head. He threw an inside pitch that caught you on the hands. And if you didn't open up your hips, that ball would have never even hit you. Grow a pair of hard balls. And stop acting like a girl and shut your mouth and stop trying to bring attention to something that doesn't deserve it. You're trying to create bad blood where there doesn't have to be. That pitch was inside. It wasn't dangerous. If you didn't open your hips, and Lloyd plays baseball, he knows what I'm talking about. If you don't open up your hips and expose your hands, if you just turn your back to the pitch, you take that ball off the back of the arm, and no harm, no foul. Shut your mouth and play ball. Walk down to first base, and that's it.
There you have it. Now, you know, just to piggyback off what Mad Mike is saying, he's absolutely right. 1,000% right. You know, J. Happ does not have a history of throwing at people or throwing at people's heads. And when you look at the footage, he brought it. He opened up his hips, which brought his hands into the zone, and he got hit in the hands. It happens. Did Aaron Judge say that when he got hit in that area?
And broke his wrist?
And broke his wrist? He didn't say that.
Nope.
Not one bit. So great point, Mad Mike, and thanks for the rant. But listeners, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. We'd like to thank you for sticking with us, and thanks to all the new listeners that are joining us. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going, and I want to thank my right-hand man, Mad Mike, for rocking out with his boy. And again, happy Mother's Day, although Mother's Day was yesterday, but again, another Mother's Day shout-out for me and Mad Mike to all the mothers out there. So hope the women enjoyed their day. Me and Mad Mike, I'll see you in 7 days, where hopefully we'll be talking about the New York Knicks owning the number one or number two pick in this year's draft. So, hey, yo, I know you're a Knicks fan, baby. Let's get this Knicks luck going. We out of here, baby.
I have my fingers and my toes crossed so that hopefully next week we can talk about some good news involving our New York Knicks. Brand new episodes of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show drop every single Monday. Make sure you subscribe everywhere podcasts are available, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. You can send some questions over there. They'll be answered on a future episode of the show. And of course, follow at Lloyd A. Thompson on Instagram and Twitter. Appreciate everybody listening. Once again, we'll see y'all in 7 days. Peace.